host, Gary Moore.
I still remember when you used to be now.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. From Boston University School of Medicine, as published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Psychiatric Practice, we're going to find out how doctors are prescribing yoga for depression and anxiety, and they're improving. That's good. Also today, we're going to be speaking with a person who, well, the average American has probably never heard of him. He is a whistleblower, and his name is John Kiriakou. He is a former CIA analyst, counterterrorism operations officer, case officer, and was a senior investigator for the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And he was later John Kerry's intelligence advisor. And also, after 9/11, he was the chief of counterterrorist operations in Pakistan. And he was executive assistant to the CIA's deputy director of operations. So he has been in the CIA and the intelligence community for decades. He's a whistleblower because he discovered that they were doing waterboarding and torturing. And he gave that information to a reporter. And for that, he went to prison for 2 years. Now imagine, you do the right thing to the wrong people, and those people are virtually immune from scrutiny, criticism, and the media protects them and condemns you. So I wanted his perspective on this dog and pony show, this farce, this completely absurd impeachment proceeding. Not because I believe that Trump couldn't be impeached. He shouldn't be president for about 10,000 reasons. But because who's doing it, what they're doing, this is the deep state and all of its allies and acolytes and sycophants. They're all lined up and they're all on the wrong side of truth on this issue, just as they were with Russia being behind the leaks. It was not Russia giving information to WikiLeaks. It was a person inside the Democratic National Headquarters when he saw that it was being slanted and played towards Hillary and against Bernie Sanders. He happened to have been a supporter of Bernie Sanders. Anyhow, so we're going to give you a different perspective today on what really goes on with the media and why you can't trust anything that the media has to say on any of these issues. Both the left and the right are wrong on this issue. So that's going to take most of our program, but I'm also going to squeeze in there a short piece to bring you up to date on what's actually happening in Bolivia with the coup that this administration was a part of and helped orchestrate. And this again is the CIA. This again is the same John Brennan, not that he's there now, but he was there, Clapper was there, when they were undoing Honduras' democratically elected government and putting in an American-friendly oligarch. The same is true with Ukraine, Syria, Libya. So we're going to cover this. We're going to have one of Gray Zone's reporters debunk the Bolivian coup myths that are being held by the American media. So you'll get the truth. So that's our program, and we start with the latest on health and healing. And when it comes to healing, we're finding more than natural treatments are making a difference. That's what Boston University School of Medicine scientists found, that yoga, practiced on a regular basis, is a very positive means to reduce symptoms of depression and anxiety. So that's the takeaway message. So if you have depression and anxiety, exercise an hour a day. That helps because you create endorphins, the feel-good hormones, get you those dopamine hits, and then do yoga and meditation. From the Technical University of Denmark comes a study about mushroom and a particular compound found in mushrooms and is called the ergothionine, and it's produced in yeast and has potential to help people with dementia. So the scientists prove that this phytonutrient, an important compound that may be used to delay the onset of diseases like Alzheimer's and dementia, can be produced in baker's yeast, and it should also be used with antioxidants. And sauté mushrooms, maitake, shiitake, reishi, they're all good. And they also have phytonutrients to help with turning off inflammation in the brain, and that helps as well. Also, from University of Bristol, which is in the United Kingdom, comes a study about complementary and alternative therapies to treat colic. So a review of the evidence on the use of complementary and alternative therapies to treat babies with colic has shown that some of the treatments, including probiotics, fennel extracts, and spinal manipulation, that's chiropractic, do appear to help. Mind you, this is mainstream saying this. This is the National Institutes of Health Research, that's equivalent to our National Academy of Sciences and U.S. Public Health Service, at the University of Bristol and the University of Manchester, both reviewed, published systemic reviews and or systematic reviews on the use of complementary and alternative therapies to treat babies with colic, and have found that they work. And there were 16 separate reviews on a variety of therapies. So once again, to the quackbusters, to the skeptics, to the people on Wikipedia, you're wrong. You're on the wrong side of this. And by the way, last evening, when we were doing research, Richard Gale and myself, we came across, finally, and it took a lot of detective work, who actually started the skeptic organizations. We're going to let you know that in an article we're going to be producing within the next few days. It's surprising, and boy, does it open them up for litigation. And we were on a phone last night with litigators as well. So they have acted in a very responsible manner, and now it's time for them to be held legally accountable. And they thought they had a firewall that would protect them from this litigation. Oh, well, we'll see. From Norwegian University of Science and Technology comes a study published in the Lancet Public Health Journal that improved fitness can mean living longer without dementia. So what's the takeaway message? Staying fit or improving fitness over time should be a goal for anyone who wants to reduce the likelihood of getting dementia. That's it. Stay fit. How about that? Real simple. Occam's razor. Go right to the point. And don't look at all the complications of making excuses for why you have to have that junk food or those tasty fries or that pizza because it's too late at night to make a meal and that's easy. That's the complications that we give ourselves to justify bad choices. Make the right choice instead. The effects of massage on vital signs, pain and comfort levels in liver transplant patients. This is just a study to determine what happens when you give a back massage on post-operative vital signs, and it improves them. So, once again, therapeutic touch can make a difference when a person is recovering. And omega-3 fatty acids benefit hospital patients. This was published in the Journal of Parenteral and Enteral Nutrition. Administering the omega-3 fatty acids lowered the risk of infection and shorter hospital stays compared to standard solutions. So what, and this is from the Health Economics Research in Italy. So what happens if you start taking these omega-3s every day? It's a simple rule. If something that is natural, non-toxic, can help alleviate, improve, or reverse a condition, then by a simple measure of reason, it should be able to prevent it as well. So if you're taking high-dose vitamin C because you have cirrhosis of the liver, you have AIDS, defining illnesses, you have cancer, then helping take those can help prevent those as well. And also, a healthy plant-based diet can substantially reduce type 2 diabetes risk. Who says? Harvard School of Public Health in a major study. So consuming a healthy plant-based diet, especially one rich in the plants such as whole grains, fruits and vegetables, nuts and legumes, lowers your risk of developing type 2 diabetes. And there's also from the University of Otago, which is in New Zealand, good evidence for zinc against diabetes complications. So the higher the zinc levels in the blood, that lowers your risk of cardiovascular disease if you're diabetic. I would say 15 to 30 milligrams. This was published in the Prairie View Journal of Nutrients. And finally, I was asked yesterday, what is the benefit of ashwagandha? So, okay, I just wanted to give a little background. Ash, A-S-H, WAG, W-A-G, ananda, A-N-D-H-A, ashwagandha. It's an adaptogen, meaning it can adapt to help you manage stress. It can help improve the blood flow. It can help brain function, lowers blood sugar, lowers cortisol levels, helps with anxiety and depression. It's an ancient medicinal herb. It's one of the most important herbs in Ayurveda, a form of alternative medicine based on Indian principles of natural healing. It's been used for more than 3,000 years. It definitely increases your energy levels. People with chronic fatigue syndrome, Lyme's disease, or adrenal exhaustion, ashwagandha is really good. It can improve your concentration. And by the way, ashwagandha in Sanskrit means smell of the horse, which refers to both its unique smell and its ability to increase strength. So yeah, it doesn't smell good, but boy, it gives you energy up substantially. And it comes from a small plant, yellow flowers that are native to India and North Africa. And so you can reduce your blood sugar levels, and you can, it has anti-cancer properties. It can reduce cortisol levels, therefore you're not hurting yourself with excessive stress. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come right back into hearing what the reporter for Anaya from Gray Zone has to say about an update. It's a brief update on Bolivia and the coup.
Well, Anya, apparently, is a journalist focusing on Latin America at The Gray Zone, which is an independent news website. And to have you with us, I wanted to get your thoughts immediately on how this is being cast. It's being seen as a coup and questions being asked about the role of the military. Is that how you would characterize this as well?
Absolutely. I think there's no question that what we've just witnessed in Bolivia is a military coup. What else do you call it when a president is forced to resign after the head of the armed forces, someone no Bolivian actually voted for, calls on the president to step down? And we should keep in mind Evo Morales' mandate, regardless of what you think about the October 20th result, does last until this January. So even if we were to invalidate last election, Evo still is the president, or should have been the president, until January. But instead, we've seen him step down, saying that he's stepping down because members of his party, Movimiento al Socialismo, have actually fallen under threat. Their homes of mayors and governors were attacked by violent demonstrators who threatened to carry them out of their houses and set them on fire. We saw public journalists working for Bolivia Television dragged out of their offices by these very clearly right-wing, violent, non-democratic protesters and demanding they stop their broadcasts of the demonstrations. This, to me, appears to be completely undemocratic and a clear attack against Evo Morales and his mandate. He was willing to go for elections again.
But Anya, he said he was willing to go to elections again only after there'd been weeks of protests, only after the Organization of American States had said that the results should be annulled. You can go back to the referendum that was carried out that said he shouldn't have sought a fourth term. He's complicit in a lot of this situation, isn't he? This could have been avoided.
The Supreme Court ruled that Evo Morales had the right to run for this term, so I believe the question of term limits is a distraction from the question of who actually won the October 20th election. We should talk about the Organization for American States, which, under the leadership of Luis Almagro, the former foreign minister of Uruguay, has become a complete tool of the United States. I've covered it very closely from here in Washington. We don't hear Luis Almagro denouncing, for example, Juan Orlando Hernandez, the president of Honduras, who has also been protested for years, but especially over the last several months after his brother was implicated in a multi-million dollar cocaine and drug running scandal in the United States. He was actually found guilty of running drugs and guns to the U.S., and that president is named as a co-conspirator in the case, yet Luis Almagro is silent about Honduras. He's silent about Chile, where we saw security forces systematically targeting demonstrators and shooting them in the eyes. And that's because the OAS is only interested in carrying out the policies of Washington. Washington pays for 60% of that organization's budget. And I would urge viewers and journalists alike to read a report recently issued by the Center for Economic and Policy Research, a very fine and credible think tank based here in Washington, which looked at claims by the OAS about voting irregularities and fraud, allegations of fraud in the Bolivian elections, and found that there were no actual credible pieces of evidence to suggest that this vote was invalid. 47% of Bolivians on October 20th voted for Evo Morales. And we should remember that Evo Morales came to be the presidency in 2003 on the backs of a social movement that was standing up to Carlos Mesa himself. He was president, vice president, after the former president Gonzalo Sanchez de la Thota was forced to resign for massacring demonstrators standing up to protect their natural and national resources. Evo was among those demonstrators, and he rode a massive social movement of working people, of peasants, of farmers into power. Those people will not disappear, even if Morales is forced to step down. That is
down. Okay, so he's in Mexico. Trump applauded the coup. That should surprise no one. Our entire intelligence agencies were behind this coup. This isn't being discussed except by the New York Times. But the New York Times, and it's so disappointing to see this kind of biased reporting, is making it seem as if somehow this is a uprising by the people. It's not. This is a coup. The people support Evo Morales. Now the new guy in there, he is just as bad as the president of Brazil. He wants to eradicate all indigenous culture and people in power who are indigenous. Evo Morales is an indigenous person. So America, the American media, is on the wrong side of this issue. It's that simple. We'll continue to keep you aware of what's going on. And now we're going, and by the way, you can watch any of our videos by going to youtube.com/PRNFM. Now we're going to take a break because I'm going to give more time to my guest because he has a lot to say. We'll be right back with my guest in just a moment. Please stay with us.
I've heard people say that it's just not enough, man. It's just not enough.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Now we're going to be joined to talk about whistleblowers being brought forth by the Democrats in the Trump impeachment case. And is there a double standard when dealing with people who are talking about some infraction? Right now, the whistleblower is being protected, not even allowed to testify. But my guest on the phone now, John Chirico, has not been given the same advantage. He was put in jail. His life was substantially destroyed. And what crime did he commit? He exposed corruption by the deep state, the very same deep state that seems to have gotten itself fully accepted into the mainstream media. One of the deep state, the former head of the CIA, the other, the former national director of security, national security, both are now commentators on MSNBC and CNN. Historically, that would never have been acceptable by the Democrats or the liberal community. Why is it now acceptable? Why are we defending people such as Clapper and others who historically have been shown to be extremely biased and political? That's what we're going to talk about. And John, by the way, is a former CIA analyst, counterterrorism operations officer, case officer, and was a senior investigator for the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He was later John Kerry's intelligence advisor. After 9/11, John was chief of counterterrorist operations in Pakistan, later becoming the executive assistant to the CIA's deputy director of operations. John turned whistleblower over the CIA's torture policy practiced against prisoners in custody, thus becoming the first government official to confirm the use of waterboarding on al-Qaeda inmates. He was tried for passing on classified information and served 2 years in a federal corrections facility. He was the sixth indicted whistleblower by Obama under the Espionage Act, and I believe that that meant that Obama had prosecuted more whistleblowers than all other previous presidents combined. Nevertheless, John had received 10 exceptional awards from the CIA and the State Department's Meritorious Honor Award. He has also received the Joe Galloway Award for Civic Courage on National Security and as a whistleblower. And in 2013, he received the Peacemaker of the Year Award from the Justice Center. In 2016, the Sam Adams Award, among others. And he's written several books, including The Reluctant Spy, My Secret Life in the CIA's War on Terror, and more recently, Doing Time Like a Spy, How the CIA Taught Me to Survive and Thrive in Prison. John hosts the broadcast Loud and Clear, which can be heard on the Progressive Radio Network every Wednesday at 7 Eastern Time. His website is John, I'll spell it for you, KIRIAKOU.com. Nice to have you with us today, John.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
John, way back in 1967, I did my first radio program, and I wanted to do something different. When I was listening to people broadcast on radio programs, they generally had very short interviews, and at the time it was around 7 minutes. You could occasionally go as long as 12 minutes, and half that time was the host interrupting the guest. And I thought, wouldn't it be nice if we had a program where you ask intelligent questions, then let the audience listen in proper context and fully to the person being interviewed. And that's what I've done ever since. So I'm going to do the same today. I'm going to ask just a series of interrelated questions. Then please take them as you will, uninterrupted, and take them to the conclusion that you feel we need in order to better understand that. All right?
Thank you.
Now, the big issue for me is there is a double standard. I am no supporter of Donald Trump, just to the contrary. But I'm very concerned when actors within the deep state, or what others have called the Beltway Consensus, those in power, including the Clintons, decide that they can commit crimes and not be punished. Others can commit crimes and are fully punished. And then some who do not commit crimes are also punished. And yet the media has yet to have a discussion on this. I've reviewed, along with Richard Gale, our producer, I've reviewed the networks, I've reviewed the New York Times, and you do not have this discussion. How is it that we have multiple tiers of justice in this society? Now, right now, we have hearings going on about Trump being impeached. Well, okay, what are his crimes specifically? And is this allowing due process? For example, is he allowed to have his attorneys, as was done under the Clinton situation and Nixon situation with impeachment, so you can have due process? You can question the accuser. And I'm not sure that that is being done at all with Schiff running this entire operation. And how likely is it that the deep state is behind this? Where this really isn't about impeaching the president, because that's highly improbable that it would get through the Senate that has to do the actual trial. But then could this just be a political ploy to, let's say, make it less likely he would be elected in the 2020 election? And if that's the case, then shouldn't we be in the media concerned of how we, the public, have been played. The forum is yours.
Oh, I think that we should be concerned. First of all, you make a lot of very good and important points here. Let's start off by saying that there really is a deep state. It's not a conspiracy. It's not a secret. You don't have to call it the deep state. You can call it the federal bureaucracy. You can call it the state. But it's there. At the CIA, for example, the CIA is led by a cadre of officers. They are members of something called the Senior Intelligence Service, SIS, and most of those officers have been in place for 20, 25, 30 years, in some cases more than 30 years. They see presidents come and go, and they don't go anywhere. And they know that if they don't like a president, they can either outweight him or they can undermine him. Like you, I am not a fan of Donald Trump's. But let's not think that we have to jump in then on the side of the deep state or the side of the CIA just because we don't like Donald Trump. We have to call a spade here. And we've got an intelligence community that wields far too much power, that has far too much authority in government, and that has no effective oversight on Capitol Hill. And I think that is one of our biggest problems. You made another point that I think is very important I'd like to address. This is not a partisan issue. It was Barack Obama and Eric Holder who prosecuted 8 national security whistleblowers just in the 8 years of the Obama administration. Now, from the passage of the Espionage Act in 1917 until 2009, only 3 people were prosecuted in America for speaking to the press. So Barack Obama was responsible for almost 3 times as many Espionage Act prosecutions as all previous presidents combined. There's a reason for that, and that is because the Democrats, as much as the Republicans, are a part of this deep state. And this is why we need 2 things. We need real congressional oversight, and I mean 1975 church committee style congressional oversight of the intelligence community. And frankly, and I know this is a pipe dream, but we need a viable third party.
All right, good. Thank you. I appreciate the overview. Why don't you take us on a journey of who the main characters are, at least to your knowledge of the deep state, and how it functions, and how, since the Church Committee hearings in 1974, that was a high mark, in my opinion, because he was able to get the director of the CIA, Helms at the time, to acknowledge that the CIA had enormous influence over the media.
Yes.
And had infiltrated virtually all the different aspects of the media. He asked for a closed session to go into specifics, but it was then determined that the president of CBS News welcomed the CIA's input. Now we hear that once all these hearings occurred and there was some effort at changing some things, I think it was Maxwell Turner, or what was his name? He was Admiral Turner under Jimmy Carter, tried to make some changes.
Stansfield.
Those were thwarted. But we have a completely unaccountable CIA, National Security Agency, and 14 other agencies that no one accounts for anything. They're not audited. They can do what they want. And then I ask a basic question. When you look at the history of the FBI and the CIA, and let's just stop with those two, and you look at all the things they've been engaged in, including regime changes in 61 countries since the end of World War II, the latest being in South America, with the ouster of Evo Morales, who ended up
yes.
in Mexico. Not once has anyone within the CIA or the intelligence agencies, the State Department, or the White House or the Pentagon, not a single human being has been held accountable for all these crimes against humanity. Not a single person was held accountable when we went into Iraq, Afghanistan, Yemen, mm-hmm. Libya, Syria. Not a single person. But if you and I break any rules at all, even minor rules, a misdemeanor, jaywalking, suddenly we're put on the list of people that must be accounted for. So why do we have a system that is so absolutely out of balance when it comes to accountability?
Oh, yeah, you're so right. And it's because we, the people, don't have any influence on whatever the national dialogue happens to be. I have a friend who's a journalist at BuzzFeed, Jason Leopold. I find Jason to be an incredibly honest and ethical journalist. He's also a master of the use of the Freedom of Information Act. And a couple of years ago, he filed a Freedom of Information Act request asking for copies of every email that the CIA exchanged with a journalist over the previous X amount of time, 2, 3, 5 years, whatever it was. He poured through all of this information, and he found that there are several journalists, more than several, including NBC's Ken Delanian, that network's chief intelligence correspondent, who were sending their articles to the CIA for clearance and approval before sending them to their own editors. So it's my opinion that that is not journalism. Gisting the CIA's talking points is not journalism. Journalism is, at least investigative journalism in national security, is almost dead in this country. And it's because the mainstream media is in bed with the intelligence community, just as you said. Now, we've got John Brennan, the former director of the CIA, who's now a talking head at MSNBC. We have James Clapper, the former director of national intelligence, who's a talking head at CNN. We have Philip Mudd, the former deputy director of the FBI and a former senior CIA officer, who's a talking head at CNN, and the rumor is he's getting his own show. And Mike Hayden, the former head of both NSA and CIA, who goes on literally every network to talk about how great the intelligence community is and how there's no such thing as the deep state. Well, the truth is, you know, most Americans are busy with their lives. They don't have time to do their own independent investigations into who to believe and who not to believe and what the truth is and what the background is. They rely on these mainstream corporate news networks to tell them what's important and what's not. Well, when you have retired CIA, FBI, and NSA senior officials telling you what's important and what's not, they're corrupting the entire debate. And so what we have now is a country and a Congress that just parrots back what the deep state wants it to parrot back. And that's a true disservice to the American people.
John, when you look at what's going on now in Washington, why is it that we seem to be very selective in our outrage? We're outraged by someone like Chris Hedges or Abby Martin, right, or Black Agenda Reports or yourself or any of the dozens of people, probably around 150 people, who have all professional backgrounds. Many of them were professional journalists. And in fact, in the case of Chris Hedges, he was with the New York Times and won a Pulitzer Prize.
Yes.
And yet all of them are excluded now. They're wiped clean. You can't find their work over Google or Facebook. And then they're not only marginalized, they're then condemned. So we're in this unique situation, this paradox, where the people
really are
reporting accurately and honestly and exposing corruption by government, by industry, by individuals, they're now being persecuted. Their reputation is destroyed on Wikipedia.
And it's because they just simply don't fit the narrative anymore. And then when you've got the networks working with the likes of Google and Yahoo and Facebook, and to a slightly lesser extent Twitter, to decide what news we get to see and what news they don't want us to see, then you know we have a problem. And again, it comes back to congressional oversight. There is no congressional oversight. It's Congress and the committees that are supposed to manage these things that are letting the intelligence community, that are letting the corporate media, and that are letting these enormous information monopolies get away with it. Nobody is saying anything. Let me tell you a little story, too, about a case that I think is more indicative of the problem, more explanatory of the problem than my own case. And that's the case of a famed NSA whistleblower by the name of Tom Drake. Tom Drake began his NSA career on the morning of 9/11. He had been a senior officer in the U.S. Air Force, and he joined NSA as a senior intelligence service officer. So he's an he was an executive there at the time. In the immediate aftermath of 9/11, he recognized that NSA had illegally begun a program whereby it was intercepting the communications of American citizens. That was a violation of the law. It was even a violation of NSA's own charter. And so Tom Drake did exactly what we're all taught to do. He went through his chain of command to lodge a complaint. He went to his superior, who told him to mind his own business. He then went to the Inspector General. The Inspector General was not even read into the program, and so the Inspector General didn't know what he was talking about. He then went to the General Counsel, who told him he was in over his head and to back off. He then went to the Pentagon Inspector General, because NSA is a DOD agency. The Pentagon Inspector General actually destroyed the evidence that Tom brought out with him. And so Tom went to the Oversight Committee. He went to the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence to report waste, fraud, abuse, and illegality, that NSA was spying on American citizens in violation of the law. And what did he get for his trouble? He was charged with 9 felonies, including 7 counts of espionage. Now, eventually, the case fell apart, because he hadn't committed espionage, and he had done exactly as he was supposed to do by going through his chain of command and onto the Oversight Committee. So all those felonies fell apart, and they were all dismissed, but not until he lost his security clearance, he lost his job, he lost his pension, he even lost his wife, who elected to remain at NSA rather than remain married to him. And now he's working at the Apple Store in Bethesda, Maryland, one of the foremost thinkers on issues of internet privacy in our country. And he lost everything because he did the right thing. I'm sorry to say that that story is typical of what happens to national security whistleblowers in America. Our congressional oversight committees don't want to know the truth. The inspectors general, who are supposed to be the tip of the spear on these issues, don't want to know the truth. And certainly the journalists, who are in the pocket of the CIA and the FBI and the NSA, don't want to know the truth. And that's why we find ourselves in the position that we're in.
I'd like to take this a little further, in that there was a man named Wellstone who was a legislator. Unfortunately, he died in a plane crash, a single plane crash, not a jet. And he was willing to investigate them. And it may have been a coincidence. I have no evidence to the contrary. But the moment anybody gets too close to wanting to do something, they're suddenly faced with a lot of problems. And from the last of these hearings about holding those in power accountable, we were led to believe that the members of the Senate Intelligence Committee and the House Oversight Committees on Intelligence, which have a lot of people all told, between the two, it's over 30, that they would tell us, as you said, the inspector general's the tip of the spear in public when corruption occurs, and yet not a single member of any of these committees in the last 35 years have come forward and said, there is evidence that we have been exposed to that shows that the some faction within these intelligence agencies is operating extrajudicially or outside of the framework of their rules and laws. Not once. What we were told about 4 years ago was by two members of the intelligence committee that they knew that something was bad, but they couldn't talk about it because they were held to a confidentiality statement. And I'm thinking when they said that, your first obligation is to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States and its citizens. So you're telling us that that is your priority. And that reminded me when I heard him say that, and hence nothing was ever told, that the tobacco industry gave the patent information to the Food and Drug Administration years before. The FBI, FDA knew that tobacco smoking could lead to addiction, and all 7 of the heads of the tobacco industry said that there was no such thing as addiction and cancer and the lungs, and then a whistleblower, finally, not a government agent, but a private citizen, found the truth and exposed it. Then all seven of those had to apologize, but not one was held accountable. They had to pay a cumulative fine over I think, about 20 years of $220 billion. Once again, this information was fully in the hands of the FDA. The FDA thought more of proprietary interests of protecting the patent rights and secrets of the manufacturers than 10 to 15 million Americans who died from smoking-related diseases. Mm-hmm. So now we have intelligence committee that don't share intelligence with the American public. We have oversight committees that don't share us when something's gone wrong. No one's ever held accountable. And I'm very concerned that they're not just captured, that they're willingly complicit in going along with the military-industrial complex or its different divisions. And is this a concern to you as it is to me?
Oh, it's of great concern to me. Let me tell you my own experience. I blew the whistle on the CIA's torture program in December of 2007. And rather than anybody on Capitol Hill coming to my defense, what happened instead was Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri, who at the time was the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, called for me to be charged with treason, which is a death penalty charge. And on the House side, Congresswoman Jane Harman, who was the chairwoman of the House Intelligence Committee, lied and said that she had no idea that there was a torture program when reporters pointed out that she actually chaired the meeting where the torture program was approved. She said that no, she remembered getting up and leaving that meeting early, and so her aide, who stayed back as a note-taker, must not have informed her. That was proven to be a lie. And then Nancy Pelosi, who was Speaker of the House, said that that she didn't recall anybody ever telling her about any torture program, because certainly she would have stood up against it. They were all lying. They were all being disingenuous. But this is what they do. They're all in the pocket of the CIA. And then when they get caught, they lie, they obfuscate, and then they try to change the subject. This is the kind of thing that happens all the time. And this is something that the CIA is very, very good at, especially with members of Congress and also especially with newly elected presidents. I'll give you an example in Barack Obama. Barack Obama had literally no experience whatsoever in intelligence and only 4 years of experience in international affairs as a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, which actually is a joke. You don't really do anything related to foreign affairs in SFRC. I can tell you that as the former senior investigator. So what they do is whenever a new president is elected, the day after Election Day, as president-elect, he is eligible to receive a PDB briefing. That's President's Daily Brief. And what they do is they send usually the deputy director of the CIA for intelligence to brief a newly elected president. Once you get in front of that president-elect with arguably the most highly classified document produced by the American government, and once he sees his first blue border report or black border report classified at multiple levels above top secret, you've hooked him. He's a member of the gang. What you say is, Mr. President-elect, I want to tell you about all the cool things we're doing all around the world. And you've made him part of the club. Next thing you know, this new president, who knows nothing about intelligence, is your biggest fan and biggest supporter. Well, the same thing happens on Capitol Hill. I had the opportunity, when I got home from prison in 2015, to confront a Democratic senator who was and is a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And I said to him, you knew what I was going through. You knew that I had told the truth. Why didn't you defend me? And angrily, he responded, it takes all of my energy just to not lose my security clearance. So we know that the CIA and the DNI and NSA and FBI and others constantly put pressure on these elected officials to whom they are supposed to be reporting. In fact, it's those elected officials who report to the CIA.
I'd like to give two examples that we broadcast on my program about a year ago. One was from a Dutch and then a German, two reporters, highly respected in their country, and one of them told about how much influence intelligence agencies and foreign governments had in their own reporting, and where they were constantly censored and the story redirected or killed. And but one of them said something interesting. He said he was taken out into the Iraqi desert and with a whole bunch of other journalists. And they were taken to a place about a four-hour drive from Baghdad, I believe it was. And then they got off the bus, the reporting bus, and he was standing around wondering, why are we out here in the middle of nowhere? There's no houses, there's no people, as far as the eye could see. And then they saw a bunch of vehicles. And about an hour later, all these vehicles were set on fire. And then all these different reporters were lined up with their cameras and reporting with these vehicles going in the background and shots being heard as if they were in a war zone and they were under attack. And he's thinking, well, this is all staged. None of this is real. So when he gets, and he refused to participate. So when he gets back, he's watching the news on television, and this is how they manufactured those stories about killings and bombings. Then another report came in from a woman named Beasley, who's a very good journalist, and she was in Syria and reported there about the truth that that Assad did not gas his own people. We had already heard from two other reporters, including one that was very detailed by Seymour Hersh, that he didn't do it, but rather the so-called good terrorists were actually responsible. But anyhow, this was just classic. The camera is out a window. There's no one in a room. You just see a camera shooting out a window, and the background is some buildings. And then after a long period of time, hours, you hear a bunch of people come in, and they refocus the camera to a very specific location. And then you see a big puff of smoke and fire. And then the reporter is out there talking about how under fire, under bombardment. But one of the people who was a part of this had a camera on, and they went around the building, and it was a ditch. And there was hundreds of people from the local town going in the ditch because oil had spilled into the ditch, a pipe had broken, and so they were getting oil for themselves and taking it back to their home, or fuel back to their home. Right. And then someone lit the fire at a specific time, and hence it was all staged. And that was CNN. They staged this damn thing. Well, we played the whole thing so you could see for yourself, not a word. So we're manufacturing consent. And as Noam Chomsky has said, and before him others, we are staging events. We are falsifying information. The media is, and they couldn't be doing that without the deep state involvement. And yet, not a word of criticism about any of this by anyone in the mainstream media, or for that matter, in Congress, Democrat or Republican. So I considered it, you can't believe anyone anymore in Washington. Your thoughts?
And let me add a postscript to that as well. In the meantime, the United Nations came out with a report saying that they had investigated and that there was no chemical attack in Syria, that it was some sort of an intelligence operation. I hate the term false flag because it sounds now like people are crazy when you use the term, but this chemical attack in Syria that brought us to the brink of war just simply never happened. While that was an official United Nations report, the American media never mentioned a word of it.
Finally, John, I want to mention that the founder of the White Helmets died under unusual circumstances in Turkey 2 days ago. And when the White Helmets were nominated for the Academy Award and won short documentary, and they were on Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman being praised, we did our research, and we found that they were part of a terrorist organization, that they were not benevolent, In fact, video had surfaced, and we collected that video, showing them engaged in terrorist activities. And yet the mainstream media to this day refuses to acknowledge that Assad didn't gas his own people, that Gaddafi wasn't killing his own people in Libya, and that the White Helmets are great people and deserve the hundreds of millions of dollars that they have received. And yet independent reporters who've gone into the battle zone see that the local people want nothing to do with the White Helmets, that they're always where the terrorists are. And then when they went into an area of Syria where it had been liberated, they saw that the White Helmets and the terrorists shared the same building, and it was just all a public relations campaign. And it's just, to me, it's just mind-numbing that people on the left, including Democracy Now!, continue to promote regime change in Syria, which she did, and promote the White Helmets, which she did. And what has happened to the people who should be telling us the full facts? Your thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah, it's my understanding, and I say that based on what I consider to be some pretty extensive research, that the White Helmets are an Al-Qaeda-affiliated group. Why and how the intelligence community decided that the White Helmets were going to be the saviors of Syria, I don't know. But we should also remind ourselves that the U.S. government has publicly affiliated itself with Al-Qaeda groups in places like Syria and Libya. I'm thinking specifically of the Al-Nusra Front, which used to be called Al-Qaeda until it changed its name, and nobody seems to care. You know, in my mind, 9/11 happened practically yesterday. It's not 19 years ago. It happened practically yesterday. I remember it with the same visceral feeling that I had on that day. And the notion that we have allied ourselves with the likes of Al-Qaeda, even just situationally, makes me sick. And it makes me sick that there's no accountability.
I want to add one final thought. I'd like your opinion, because it's, I haven't asked any whistleblower this before, but after Libya was attacked, we did our own investigation, and here's what we found. We found that Gaddafi was not involved in any terrorist activity, that of the 54 countries in Africa, Libya had the highest income per person. Yeah. There was no debt. There was the longest life expectancy in Africa, the highest literacy rate. 84% of the population were literate and had gone to educational institutions. That's higher than the United States or Great Britain. That if you wanted to have a farm, they bought you the farm and would provide you with all the tools you needed, tractors, seeds. That he had created the largest water project in the world that would provide good water to over 200 million people living in yes. northern Africa free. And that he had the best laws in the world for protection of women, and there was more freedoms for Muslim women in Libya than any other country on the planet. In fact, it was against law to insult a woman. Women had all the rights. They were in the legislative bodies, and they had local constitutional councils where thousands of people in Libya would make decisions based on what was right for their communities, and it didn't have to align with Gaddafi. For all intents and purposes, for the last 4 years of his life, Gaddafi was not in the same position of power. He had relegated almost everything. And there was no crime. It was called the Paris of Africa.
Yes.
And we were lied to by Obama. We were lied to by Hillary Clinton and others, the neocons. Now you go back to Libya today, and it's a completely destroyed state.
Yes.
And they're selling Africans in slave markets. They're a home to multiple terrorist groups, and yet not a single person has even been criticized, let alone brought up on crimes against humanity charges. Yet for you, they put you and others and Chelsea Manning and Drake and the top whistleblowers around the world in prison or charged them for exposing crimes. And this was one of the worst crimes I've ever seen. And yet these people are praised and rewarded for crimes against humanity. Your final thoughts, please.
Yes, everything that you've just recounted is true, and there's been no price to pay for casting Libya to the wolves, as our government has done, everything that you've recounted is true, and it's well documented. We didn't like Muammar al-Qaddafi's politics, and I'm sure that the plan sat on the shelf for a long time to overthrow him. Not only was he overthrown, but it was done in the most heinous way too, where he was sodomized and murdered in the street like an animal. We've done nothing to then help the Libyan people. I use the word help in air quotes because it seems that everything we do, especially in that region, just makes the situation worse. But we should be ashamed of ourselves because we have indeed committed crimes against humanity and war crimes. And that's something that you're just not supposed to talk about. You know, would-be whistleblowers come and talk to me all the time. They seek me out. They ask for advice. And I have to be honest with them. And I say, listen, if you see evidence of waste, fraud, abuse, illegality, or threats to the public health or public safety, the right thing to do is to report it. But I'm not going to lie to you. I will tell you that if you do it, you take your career and your life into your own hands. Things will not be easy, and the chances are good that your professional and personal life will be ruined.
I'm sorry, but we're out of time for this interview. I'm going to invite John back for a full hour on the Progressive Commentary Hour this week on Tuesday night, so we'll continue to listen to John give us his insights. And he suffered. He told the truth, and he suffered. Now, I want to close out our show by just helping our sister station, WBAI. We're not raising money for premiums. Instead, today we're going to ask you to support WBAI as a buddy. What's that mean? It means that once a month you will have a certain amount of money, whatever you decide you can afford, taken out of your account, $25, $50, and that will go to help WBAI. It'll go into its general fund. And they really need it. So let me give you the number to call for your generous monthly donation. Remember, a BAI buddy is someone who signs up to make a recurring monthly donation to WBAI using either a credit card or a debit card. It's safe, it's secure, it's simple, it's automatic, and means a great deal to keeping our unique and highly qualified program on the air. So once you've joined, you'll receive a WBAI buddy card and WBAI tote bag. Now I'm going to give you the number to call so that you can call in and become a buddy. 516-620-3602. Again, please call 516-620-3602. Or you can go to their website and just go to give2wbi.org. Give and then the letter 2, WBI.org. And so this way you can do that for pledges as well. We raised $2,600 on Tuesday. And, of course, we were preempted yesterday. And so today we're just asking people to call for the buddy system for WBAI. It certainly helps the station. And right now the station needs your help desperately. We do not have money in the account to pay payroll. We do not have money to pay back rent, let alone current rent. We don't have money to pay the insurance premiums. And we're supposed to be helped by the national office, but it's also the director of that national office and that tried to oust all of us, lock the doors, sell off the license, and then keep whatever money came in to support the other four Pacifica stations. We're back on the air, and we want to thank Arthur Schwartz, the lawyer, for doing all that work, probably a couple $100,000 worth of work he did for free for us, and we're very appreciative. But we have to survive, and it's my opinion that they must have known that by taking us off the air for 5 weeks, we would lose about 95% of our audience. So it's just the small number we have now to start the rebuilding process. So please call and become a buddy. 516-620-3602. 3602, 516-620-3602. The station will appreciate it. Thank you very much.